Okay, welcome everyone. This is The Art of the Short Story, and I will introduce my co-panelists, have them introduce themselves first, and then I'll introduce myself and we'll get underway. Doc?
I'm Daniel Myers. I'm a medieval food historian and writer. I've got four short stories published now. They tend to be in the horror kind of genre, which is kind of bizarre because that's not where I really saw myself as being, but that's where I ended up writing. You write what comes to you.
If you're that bad of a cook, it's a horror story.
That's true, too. I'm a good cook, though.
I'm just kidding.
I've never killed anybody that I know of. I like short stories. Mm-hmm. I'm struggling with novel-length subject matter still. Plotting issues.
That's something, I'm looking forward to talking about.
I just can't get my head wrapped around novel plotting process yet. For a short story, I get it, and it's all in my head. I can keep the whole short story there. I can't do that with a novel.
It's cool to get a chance to talk to it about it. Jean?
I'm Jean Raby, and I've published more than 60 short stories, and I've edited about 24 anthologies.
She's cool.
By accident. My big mistake was I wrote a novel before I wrote a short story. And I can do one rewrite on a novel, and my first short stories, I would do four rewrites on it. Because a short story is a completely different approach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm cool, so just ignore me, okay?
My name is Gregory Wilson. I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University in Queens, New York, and I teach courses there in fantasy, science fiction, and creative writing. I'm also an author. My first novel came out a few years back. Next ones are being shopped. Still super close on one publisher. Still haven't heard from them. So we'll see. My first real published short story actually is coming out in a month, and one of the reasons I was excited to be on this panel is because I've always considered myself a novelist, and starting to understand and process, I've taught short stories for many years, but starting to understand the process of short story writing, as you were talking about, and the differences between that and novel writing was important for me. I also am co-editing an anthology on speculative fiction and politics with Hugo nominee John Helfers that we're shopping to publishers right now. And last, I run a podcast with Brad Bollier, who's also at Origins here, called Speculate, which is a podcast on speculative fiction writers, artists, things like that. So we've interviewed people like Brandon Sanderson and Kish Johnson and Brent Weeks and Nora Jemison and Ian McDonald most recently and a whole bunch of other people and then talk about their work. And you can find out about that at speculatesf.com. So I want to actually start by asking something which you actually led me to, and that is about what we each sort of conceive of as being different about the short story and the novel other than just the length, because I think that's the misconception that people have, is it's just short, you know, and that's the difference. But it really is its own arc and sort of process. And so I'm going to throw that to you folks first.
Sure. Okay, I'll take a bit on that.
Okay.
A novel, picture a novel as a year. Picture a novella as a month, and picture a short story as a day. And when you're trying to tell a story, don't try to tell a year's worth of story in a short story. Consider it like a breath. It's just a slice. It's a slice of something that's happening. Because when you try to pack too much into the story, you lose the elegance of what a short story is. It no longer becomes an episode. You're trying to make it an opus. And when I discovered that, I stopped doing rewrites on short stories that I was submitting to anthologies. When I discovered that I just needed to make it a slice instead of try to give it a whole pie effect. The best short stories that I've read after I've discovered this, the best short stories that I've read also take that approach. It's just a slice. My character doesn't change, you know, from point A to point B because it's a slice of his life. He hasn't had enough time for the big revelation to become a good person or to become a bad person. There might be a hint that he's going to change, But in a novel where you need a character to make a change, you need your main character to make some sort of change from the beginning of the book to the end of the book so that the action in between has had an effect on him. You don't need to do that in a short story.
Right.
Okay, that's my take.
Okay, Doc?
I'd like to expand on that, the analogy, the calendar analogy. In a short story, you don't have... You have very few things happening at once in terms of a story arc. You don't have multiple arcs and a contorted, twisted plot. And bring that into the calendar. In your day, if you're a student at a university, you've got these classes, and the classes run for months, and you've got your academic year, you've got what you're going to do next summer, you've got, so for a one-year time period, you've got all these things that have different lengths and durations, and they all play off of each other. Yeah, you can put off doing your homework in this class till the end of the week, but you've got finals coming up, so that's, you know, that affects something, and you've got to get good enough grades to be invited back next year, so on. But a short story, you know, so that would be a novel length. You've got all these different things going on and affecting each other and having an impact. But in a short story, you've got just one day to deal with. You're not really going to be talking about the chess club meetings every other Thursday and how you did last year and your sports activities in the year. You're talking about one day worth of this class, this class, this class, this class. And yeah, there are things that happen in that day. But it's nowhere near as complicated as a full year of stuff. Did that make sense?
One thing to think about with short stories is the idea that if a novel incorporates the sort of scope of a character's change, a short story will often be the defining or revelatory event that created that change, mm-hmm. right? So that event has some impact on the way that we imagine the character going forward. And one of the things that makes the short story so different from the novel is that its arc, its pacing is entirely the same. Its ambition is not necessarily the same. That's something that I want to point out. Its ambition is often the same level. There's sometimes this belief that, well, short stories, because they are shorter, you know, they're not dealing, they're sort of like, they're minor sort of like one-off things. That is not the case, okay? They are ambitious, but in their own way. Novels are ambitious over time. They're dealing with people over time. They're dealing with events over time. They're dealing with nations and things like that, as we've talked about. Short stories tend to be, although they can be about more than one day, they tend to be very compressed, very distilled, and they tend to be ambitious because they distill one or two themes or emotions to the absolute nub, right? So this is the essence of a thing. It's very different. It's very much like the difference between a haiku and a regular poem, right? If you read a sonnet or if you read an epic poem, you know, how much is Beowulf like a haiku? Not very much like. The ambition, however, is similar. Haiku is trying to represent an emotion in a grand total of 17 syllables, right? Whereas Beowulf is trying to represent an entire hero's life in the scope of the poem. Both ambitious, but in different ways. But if you conceive of, as I did, and I'll tell a little story about myself in a minute, short stories as being just short versions of novels, you're going to run into trouble because they have to do different things. So, the embarrassing story. I always considered myself a novelist. It's how I got started. It is, my first published work was also a novel. So I always considered myself a novelist. And when I started to write and think about writing short stories, I thought, no problem. I can handle a short story because a novel is 80 to 120,000 words typically. So just take 10% of that. 8 to 12,000 words, got your short story. No problem, right? So I thought it would be very simple to kind of sit down and get this done. And in terms of, you know, how much time it physically takes you to type on the keyboard, it'll be fine. So the problem with that approach is twofold. Number one, the short story that I'm thinking of was a few years ago that I was working on. Number one, it meant that I couldn't just keep it to 8,000-12,000 words because it's not as simple as that. It's not, you know, it's like if you take War and Peace and you're like, I'll just talk about the war part. No, like, you know, you can't. So you can't do that. You can't slice it off that way. It's all sort of integrated fundamentally. And so for me, as I was starting to write it, I realized there's no way I'm going to tell this story in 8 to 12. I better just, you know, keep going. So I produced this thing that's closer to 25,000, something like that, words, which is not a short story. We're talking about a novella, maybe a novelette if I stretch it, but it's basically a novella. It's not a short story at all. And so the first problem was that people were just like, this is not going to be a short story. It's too long. The second problem was that my pacing was all wrong. The arc was all wrong. It felt like I was, it was neither a novel because I was trying to compress a novel-sized story into a short story form, and I hadn't done that very well, as I've already said. And it wasn't a short story because there were too many arcs, themes, concepts, character developments, intervening political thing. It would have been awesome if it was a novel and had been multiplied by about, you know, four or five times, so it was up to 100,000 words. But at the length it was useless. And it wasn't until I finished it that I thought, this is not going to work in its current form. Maybe it could work. It was also integrated in another novel that I had been working on. So maybe it would work as a prequel to that, as a separate thing. But of its own, devoid of its context, there was no way it's going to work. So the way that I went about writing at that point forward short stories, and this short story which is coming out in this anthology, When the Villain Comes Home, which I read here last night, actually, was focused on a couple of things. Number one, I decided I really just wanted to concentrate on one thing, one theme, one idea, one concept. And then secondly, that I wanted to really reduce it to essentially the conflict between two essential points of view. Very much defined points of view, very much distinct points of view. And I can make vague references to a world outside of it. In fact, this character is one who may end up in a novel that I'm writing later on. But this will be separate from it. This is a sort of, and this happened too, you know, at some other point within that character's life. And by focusing it thematically and focusing it in terms of how much plot and character I had, I ended up with a far more impactful, powerful, a story that was much more fun for me to write, that was much shorter, and that works. It has a kind of punch, and that's what you want from short stories. Novels take time to develop, and afterwards you think, whew, that was an epic novel. But a short story has got to hit you in the gut, and you will remember, if you've read Harlan Ellison's I Have No Mouth But I Am a Scream, you will remember that story for the rest of your life because of the punch it had. I would argue that if he put that into a novel, it would not have had nearly the same impact at all. It's about the intensity, the closeness, the distillation of these things that it matters. So short stories must be conceived of differently than a novel from the very beginning.
What?
So.
What?
You have the bag of tokens?
No.
Mike came and got it for his thing, and he didn't drop. He left without ever dropping it
back. I saw him out in the hall talking to some people.
Yeah, I saw him get on the escalator.
If you look at a novel, if a novel is the Indianapolis 500, a short story is a drag race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they have different pacing. In the Indianapolis 500, you're going to go around a lot, and so you have time to, you know, try and come up the outside. You try and cut somebody off. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can go on there.
Right.
Drag racing, you've got accelerate fast and bang at the end.
Right.
I think to me, when I think of a short story, it's almost like telling a joke that has a punchline at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And the ones I enjoy the most is when I read the last sentence of a short story, it's like,
oh, you know, got it.
It hits me.
Sure.
And if there's some insight or some.
But that's very different from a novel structure.
True, but there is the same intense level of craftsmanship that went into making it so that you'd feel that punch in the end line, right, the payoff. And it's sort of the way that the whole thing was set up to begin with. Now, one thing I want to say, Doc's suggestion does not mean, therefore, that every story is this breakneck, you know, race through the streets in terms of the action. We're not talking about it in those terms. We're talking about the idea that you are distilling, intensifying your focus on one or two things, and you're concentrating on that. And the thematic part, I think, is important, too, because if you're thinking about one theme that you're representing, in the case of the story in there, I was talking a little bit about fathers and daughters and the understanding about fathers and daughters. I could say much, much more, having a daughter myself, about that theme, but I could represent one sort of exploration into that theme. If I wanted to talk about fathers, daughters, fathers, sons, fathers, husbands, wives, you know, all of a sudden, then we're kind of spiraling out into something entirely different. And so focusing on that central theme is very important and very difficult. It is hard to think that intensely in that sort of short space. So.
Yeah, and the other thing that it lets you do, I know from an editing standpoint, if you have a chance, there is an Origins anthology that's on sale this weekend that we all have stories in.
Just went live this morning, actually, right?
And they've limited it to a print run of 500. When I was editing this, I was pleasantly surprised by a piece that I hadn't read anything by this woman before, Sarah Hans. It's one of my favorite stories in the book, and it's a steampunk tale. And that should tell you that she did a good job, because I'm not particularly enamored by steampunk fiction. Just not my era, not my thing. But I read that story, and I was like, well, how cool was that? You know, so I think if you pick up that book and you read that particular story, you will see that one of the things that we're trying to illustrate is that you can do something with a short story that would not work with a novel, that would not work with a longer piece of fiction, because if you tried to tell Sarah's story in a book, you would be bored.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would try to have too many words for a tale that did not require that many words. It's like sitting through a movie that you think they could shave. What was it they said? The last Transformers movie was like an hour too long?
Arguably 2.5 hours too long.
but just if you get my point of view, yeah. So a short story gives you, as a writer, the opportunity to do something way cool and have a pow impact that wouldn't lend itself well in a novel. And it also, as a writer, gives you an opportunity to play in genres that you wouldn't otherwise.
Right.
I have written World War I, World War II, Civil War fiction, and would I write one of those novels? Maybe a World War II novel, but certainly not a Civil War novel. I have written cozy mystery short stories. I've written cat short stories.
I like, even as a reader, that story. I like short stories that are mysteries, but I don't read any
mm-hmm.
novels.
Yeah. 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 But as a writer.
For me, I'm not that into a mystery. But a short story, like a Sherlock Holmes short story or something, I like that.
Yeah.
What you're talking about brought to mind a short story I read a long time ago by Chelsea Quin Yarborough in her book Cautionary Tales. The whole story plot takes place, an archaeologist on an alien planet that used to have an alien culture there, it's extinct, falls through the floor and is trapped in a room. And they're trying to arrange to rescue her. And while she's there, she's looking at these hieroglyphs on the walls and trying to translate them. And at the end of the story, she does translate a key phrase, and that is where the pow comes in. But that's it. There is no other plot here. There are no... The only characters that show up other than her are ones by radio. And, yeah, you put that into a feature-length film, you might be able to put it into a half-hour TV show. With commercials.
With commercials.
Yeah,
yeah, but there's no way that would make an entertaining feature-length film. It would be deathly dull. And if you wrapped or put a wrapper around it of getting to the planet and leaving the planet, or the failed rescue, it would still... The punch would be gone.
Yes.
So let me ask about that. James Patrick Kelly says that, who I've interviewed a few times and is a superb short story writer, says that that this involves different muscles. And he, although he's written a couple of novels, has always enjoyed exercising the muscles of the short story. Something about the variety, the difference, the those sorts of things. So I want to sort of throw that out to you folks about the what different muscles then are involved. We've talked a little bit about some of the kind of impact and the arc and that sort of thing, but what writing challenges are you sort of working on short story-wise that are different from novel length? You were talking about plotting for a novel that's different for you, and Jean, you've done both, and now I've done both at 1.01% of your output. So let's talk a little bit about
it's
that.
Not about that. It's just I've been around a long time.
Well, but so what do we think about that?
I think that when I have an opportunity to do a short story, I want to do something that I have not attempted before, nor probably would attempt in a novel. A short story lets me really play with point of view. Mm-hmm. I had never written a novel where the point of view character was not the main character. And I'm not sure if I would do that with a novel. But I've done it with a couple of short stories, and it's way cool.
Yeah, with a novel.
My point of view character watches the main character, and he's by no means. Yeah, yeah. And I've done point of view characters that are inanimate things. You know, I've done point of view from a statue or from a critter, from a cat. And it lets me look at the world through a different pair of eyes And I have to have different emotions, and I have to have different sensibilities when I pick this point of view. And I don't think I would try to do it through a novel, because first, I'm not sure a reader would want to sit through a novel-length piece of fiction from an animated statue in the park. That does not.
There have been movies like that.
Yeah.
But what they end up being are a series of vignettes all centered around that statue, and they're all individual little short stories.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
But I think a short story lets you do that, and it's wonderful writing exercises because it makes you work outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. Which I think that's something which the working different muscles line has always made me think of. It is very dangerous to confine yourself as a writer to one particular form, at least in terms of practicing your craft. Mm-hmm. Publication is a different matter, and I am going to ask a question. Now, this is about the art, but I'm going to ask a question about the commercial value of these things in a minute, in a little bit. But the aspect of the short story itself being produced, it's very dangerous to avoid these things because they're out of your comfort zone. As a writer, the more that you can exercise different muscles, the more you will be able to handle different projects and things like that that are thrown at you. And there are moments, although the novel is different, there are moments where you will want a particular chapter or a section to have a particular intensity. If you're writing an epic fantasy and you have a historical flashback, right, which is very common, where someone comes across hieroglyphics, an ancient room, and they're reading about this story, you know, the story within the story, about a way a particular battle proceeded or something like that. Having worked out those muscles on how to create an intense moment or event in a very limited period of time will serve you well at the time that you're working on that particular small little section of the novel. I think sometimes we get stuck in this. I told you that I thought of myself as a novelist. Sometimes I think we get stuck in, I am a short story writer, or I am a novelist, or something like that. And the truth is, what you really are is an author, is a writer. And so it's your responsibility to work outside of your comfort zone. The benefit of the short story is not just that formulaically it's different. It's also that it tries, as Gene has said, allows you the opportunity to change genres. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to practice at military fiction and science, hard science fiction, or, you know, biopunk, or things that you would never have conceived of writing before. These are things which you can do, and the more tools that you have in your toolbox, right, the more things you can bring out for use later on, the better it will be for you as a writer. So,
and the more opportunities
you have too, because the market is just larger. There's a lot more opportunities to sell short stories to places too. So I want to ask a question then about the commercial aspect of this, and then maybe we can take some questions too. If you're going to sort of make a career as a writer, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to sustain yourself on writing short stories alone. But I wonder, for all of us, what we think about the balance of there are more markets available for short fiction, but you're going to get paid less and you may get noticed less on the market as a short story writer, as a novel.
And this is from an editor's standpoint, okay? I've done a lot of editing. And if you can build up some short story credits before you're shopping your novel, you're going to get a little bit more attention from the editor, because the editor is going to see that, hey, you've been published before. That means you know how to construct sentences, and that you write, you know, with some ability because you've got this published credit. That puts somebody who's got a published short story above somebody who doesn't have anything published. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easier to get a short story published than a novel, just because there are more publishers out there. I'm talking magazines, because there's fewer and fewer anthologies being produced by book publishers now. Not with small press. Small press is a great venue to get some short stories published. A small press counts as a published credit.
Does it count with CIFWA yet?
Depends.
It depends on the pay rate.
Depends,
Yeah, CIFWA pro-rate. Pro-rate doesn't care if it's big or small press. It's pay rate, which makes it pro. So I think that the short story has a great value in that respect. It also has a value because you get to work with editors who down the road might say, hey, you know, you can write Civil War short stories. I know that this particular editor over here is looking for some Civil War novels. You got something.
Sort of gateway drug.
You know, hey, I really, really liked your short fiction. Do you got some long fiction, or you should try that? Or so I think it does have some value. Plus, I think it makes you write. And sometimes when people say, I want to be a writer, and they look at a book, and a book is a daunting thing because they don't know how to break it down. A book is like, oh, I'm never going to write it. But if you write a short story, then you know you've written something, mm-hmm. and you're shopping it. Mm-hmm. So if you've written one short story,
yeah,
you
complete.
Can write a second
yeah.
short story and a third short story, and then you can write the novel. So sometimes it's not bad to start from a short story. I think it does have value in that respect. And does it have commercial value? Yeah, it can. You know, Orson Scott Card's Medicine Show, which is an e-publication, pays like a quarter a word. That's serious pro rate.
Yeah.
There's some others out there that pay.
If you think it maybe in the future, I've been noticing this already, that people are beginning to direct sell their short stories.
Yes.
And you can just buy them for a very cheap price. Mm-hmm. But if 100,000 people buy them, that really one for $1, then you've made it.
Yes.
That is a big if, but I know what you're saying. Yes.
You want to come to the digital landscape after this?
That'll be in here.
And I think there's another e thing, but I want to address the short story thing about it. But it gives you it puts you before some editors. It gets your attention, and I don't know. It's cool. Before I started getting published from Tor, there was some editors there who were reading some of my short fiction, and I had enough short fiction published, and I edited enough anthologies for Daw Books that when I had a fantasy manuscript, the editor Deborah Euler says, "Well, Gene, I'm familiar with your stuff. Why don't you send your book directly to me?" So that was kind of cool.
Yep.
So short stories can indeed help carry you.
I think
my gut would be though. You're already famous. You could make a living off your short stories. If you like Elijah Asimov, and you had all your anthology short stories out there, he probably made, you know,
from the outside the editor's viewpoint, I think there is commercial value in more the form of a lost leader.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A writer can say, okay, I've got this novel, it's not selling well. I can put out this short story in this collection, that acts as sort of anthologies are great this way. They act mm-hmm. as a tasting menu for mm-hmm. writers mm-hmm. because not everybody likes the same kind of writing style. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. Which means, you know, so you're reading through an anthology. I like this book. I like the way this author writes.
Yeah.
And you're more likely then to go and get their novel because you like their short story.
Yes.
Chris Pearson picked up an awful lot of fans for his Dragonlance stuff. They were not Dragonlance readers. Dragonlance readers tend to be gamers, but they read some of his short stories in the Daw books, and they were like, wow, this guy is, mm-hmm. is awesome. Where do I find his stuff? And I pointed him to his Dragonlance, you know, ogre.
So in some ways, that's where I see
the commercial
value lies.
So that is a commercial value. It can get you other authors. It got me an author 2 weeks ago. Someone emailed me and said, I read your horror short story, The Ascension of Mercy Grace. What other things have you written? And I thought, wow, well, I haven't written any other horror stuff, but I've written these things. And then I got an email back later from her, said she went out and bought my Taste of Magic book.
That's cool. So, yeah, that's that kind of those little sort of bite-sized pieces, in a way, are ways, as Doc says, to kind of get people engaged.
I don't think you can make a living off of it, because I think an anthology, a good anthology, okay, say mm-hmm. Daw Books puts out a fantasy book. And then they put out an anthology that's a collection of fantasy stories. At absolute best case, the anthology will sell two-thirds of what the novel does. And usually will sell like a third. So you're talking in terms of numbers, or it just doesn't do it. If you can write steadily for Playboy, you know, selling $1 a word, that's cool. But
yeah, probably not.
Or if you can turn them into screenplays. You know, a lot of the science fiction and fantasy movies are taken from short stories.
Yep.
It's getting famous to get there.
Right.
Famous just writing short stories.
You
can live off your fame, though. Once
yep.
you get famous,
yeah, that's probably true. I mean, the other thing about Asimov is that when you have a guy who writes 7 days a week, 365 days a year, which is literally what he did, I think he took off 2 days a year is exactly what it is.
Uh-oh.
There's a reason that you can go in and find a whole section that was, like, dedicated to Asimov. The guy was a machine. I mean, he did nothing but write.
He wrote an anthology of his own short stories that were all his.
Sure.
Called Azazel that I got from one of my birthdays, whatever, years ago. ago.
Sure, yeah, well.
But I'm sure he made money off that. I'm not saying he makes as much.
Right.
He's a millionaire because he wrote novels, but he might have been $100,000 if he.
Right. Well, and you know, iRobot is a series of short stories that he then tied together in a narrative, you know, adding a narrative through line of Susan Calvin, and that becomes, you know, a famous and seminal work in the field. But it started as a series of novels that were published in pulp magazines, you know, where he was gradually working this thought out about what robots would look like in the three laws of robotics and blah, 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 and then he puts it together into this actual work. So, but...
Similar with Martian Chronicles.
And
which
oddly,
is the same thing with Martian Chronicles,
what he
yeah.
made the most money off of was a tie-in book. He did what was the one where Raquel Welch got shrunk?
Yeah, that's right.
He wrote the novelization of that
yep.
and sold buckets, you know.
But it's something to consider is it can also from a commercial point of view be supplemental. You know, in fact, Gene was talking about this yesterday, that, you know, you can have novels that come out at a certain rate, and then you can release a short story, one or two or three or however many, that will supplement your income. And that can, you know, if you get a pro rate, that can be a nice little, you know, payment that you get at sort of these regular intervals as well. And also, there's the award side of things also, by the way. You know, if you get a short story out, you get a series of short stories out, you get more bites at the apple, and you get an opportunity to get nominated for a Hugo or a Nebula or something like that. I'll tell you what, if you can put Hugo nominee or Nebula nominee or Hugo or Nebula winner in front of your name, that's going to open doors, a lot of doors, if you go from that point and then say, okay, now I'm writing these novels. And it's a lot harder to write a novel that's going to get noticed because it just takes longer for people to yep. read them. There's fewer people doing it and so forth. So so that's the thing. And I think you will be often remembered for the novels you write, but people will, if you will write short stories, may remember your short story, a particular short story yep. you wrote at the same time, which is kind of this, you know, paradoxical change.
Yeah.
Good example. Yep. Yep. Good example. Okay. So Gene handed me this thing about markets.
Places they can go to look.
Right. So a few places that you can look. And these were ones, actually, I was gonna mention. So one of them, which you brought up yesterday, is Duotrope, which is Duotrope. And Duotrope is a listing of short fiction and short nonfiction markets with pay rate, right?
Down.
With pay rates, too?
Well, yeah, but the neat thing about Duotrope is it's got a search field. If you go into Duotrope and you type in fantasy, and it'll list all these magazines or anthologies that are looking for fantasy or open to fantasy short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could write teenage zombie, and you might be surprised that some stuff pops up for teenage zombies. Or anthropomorphic detective, you might get some hits on that. Seriously, I played with some goofy stuff on Duotrope, and I was like, wow, they want stories about that? And
Duotrope.com. So that's one. Raylan, a number of people already know. That's Raylan. And that's all length. That's not just short fiction. That's novels as well. I have actually not heard of the other ones you list here. I had not heard of Red Ink Works before.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Red Ink Works, redinkworks.com. And then author-network.com is another one. No, I'm sorry. I'll go back. Yeah, see. I'm sorry. Oh, that's okay. I'll be able to go through. So you got Duotrope. So Raylan, Raylan.com. Red Ink Works, just like it sounds. All one word. And then author-network, also just as it sounds, .com. And when you folks are done writing that down, I'll throw one more of my own. If you go to querytracker.com, which is QUERYtracker.com, that is a site that allows you to keep a spreadsheet of works that you have out on submission, and it will list sort of as a clearinghouse agents, publishers, looking for all different kinds of genres and, you know, subgenres and things like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a free version and a paid version, which I do, which I think is like 15 or 20 bucks a year. But the paid version allows you to put up charts and like how many people reject what number based on what, you know, like it drills down probably far more than anyone would ever humanly need to. But it's got all these different options that you can look at. And so that's one that I use. And also, if you have several projects, you can also cross-reference it, right? Like, I sent such and such to this number of agents. This is more on the novel side than the short story side, but also for short stories, I sent this to these publishers. Here's the publishers that rejected me. Here's the ones that said, well, here, they gave me a partial request or something like that for a novel. Maybe they would be someone they could look for a full novel. Or, as I say, the short story market would work in a similar way. The other one that Gene has listed here, which is important, is the Writers of the Future contest, which some of you may have heard of, which is just Writers of the Future, just all one word, .com. This is originally, it's L. Ron Hubbard's contest that's been running for a number of years. I don't even know how many years. But one of the members of the group here, the writer's track here, Brad Bollier, was a Writers of the Future winner back in 2004, 2005, something like that, and now has just released his second book with Nightshade and is working on, is just finishing up the draft of his third, which is all part of this trilogy. Well, one of the reasons he got noticed is because they were reading his short fiction. He had been published elsewhere too, and he was an award-winning author now, and he could literally say it and not mean, I won an award on Facebook once. You mean actual award. You know, and that gave him attention and credit, and, you know, people could focus on him. And he now really feels that he's a novelist more than a short story writer, but he kind of progressed in that way and had the ability to write this short story that got him noticed in the first place. So those are things to think about, too. He's a writer, not just a, I am a horror novelist or a, you know, whatever.
I've got him to write some nonfiction, too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's take, I think, if I'm right on my time. Yes. So let's take, if folks have questions.
Oh. I want to tell you what not to do.
Okay. So tell us what not to do, and then I'll take questions.
Because I have edited some open call anthologies, which I have no intention of doing again. Because the first open call anthology that I edited was for a double volume horror collection. And I got 300 submissions. And I will tell you that it has always been and always will be my policy to never send out a form letter. Even if it's a couple of sentences, I reply personally if said person includes a SACE or your email address. And if I think it's good but not there yet, I'll explain why. And 300 took me way too long to do. But
did your responses get shorter by the end? So it's just no.
No, actually, because
no.
Some of them got better.
God,
yeah. No. Someone was like, "Oh dear God, did you really write this?"
Ugh. It was just in the end.
Yes, it started my bad folder. I will not, and most editors out there won't, buy a short story that has multiple points of view. Hmm. A lot of beginning authors don't understand point of view. And I think we even have a seminar going on about point of view. Maybe that's today or tomorrow. But when you're telling a short story, only get inside of one character's head. I've gotten submissions for short stories where there are five points of view because the author wanted to let you know what each character was thinking in that story. Short story, one point of view. It's like a good rule of thumb on novels, one point of view per chapter. You can change points of view through a book, but just let's stick at one per chapter so you don't have to further choose the reader. So I will reject a short story if it's got multiple points of view. If it's an easy fix, I'll go ahead and fix that. But it's a mark of a more seasoned author or professional if you can handle one point of view. Also, I like short stories that start in the middle of a piece of action because you immediately draw the reader in. And then you can take a step back in how you got to that point, but rarely does a short story interest me that starts with, he got up, he brushed his teeth, he went out the door, he walked on the sidewalk, and there was this big car crash, you know.
Have him get hit in the head.
Start the short story with the big car crash.
Well, start the short story where it ought to start. You know, yeah. if you go through it and you hear this all the time, does the story really start there, or the story started at the wrong point? And that's basically an example. The story started at the wrong spot.
There are some authors that I'm used to working with that when they send me a short story, I know that I can automatically delete the first two or three paragraphs.
No.
I mean, and to this day, you know, Judy Rorick, bless her soul, she's a beautiful writer, and I get another short story from Judy, and it's like, well, do I take two paragraphs off the top, or do I take three this time? And that's when her story starts. And so all I know is I just check shave this out, and then here's Judy's story starting. And, well, it's
just so many editors would not do that, though. It's amazing that you do that still.
Yeah, no, it's a good story. It just starts here, can't all that other stuff. Some authors don't know where to end a short story. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it'll end, and you think it's ending, but then it's got some more, and it ends. Then it's not quite done. So
it's like one of those songs
more.
In a concert that did da-da-da, and then da-da-da-da, and you're like, oh, stop. No, enough.
So I'll just cut that off, too, you know. And if the author gets mad, well, then, hey, you know, I don't have to buy it.
Right.
But here's what I would do to your story to buy it. So just from an editor's point of view, one point of view, and like he says, start where the story starts, mm-hmm. not where...
I like having the story start with somebody getting hit in the head.
Just thunk?
That works.
Just thunk. And then you've got to have the reaction and figure out then why they were just hit in the head.
You need to make sure they recover, though, where the story is just thunk, and that's the end.
I've seen that in the novel, where the main character died in the first
That's too
chapter.
Distilled, okay? It's just, the story is just...
on the edge of consciousness, the whole story.
Yeah, which...
Watching everything happen around him.
Yeah. You've all heard the story, the famous Ernest Hemingway story, when his editor challenged him, these folks have, but when his editor challenged him to that you couldn't write a short story under 10 words. You heard this example? So Ernest Hemingway said, all right, and he sent him a telegram, and the short story was, for sale, baby shoes, never worn. Short story. And then he said at the end, you lose, which is still 8 words. So that's great. I love that. And that, of course, no one was better. I mean, Hemingway is not a perfect writer, but no one was better at understanding impact and being able to distill something to its essence. So now, do you folks have questions for us that you'd like to throw at us? And it can be either commercial thing of short stories, artistic, shorts, whatever you like.
I have a question.
Sure.
If anybody else wants to go, I don't want to monopolize the crowd here. Except for short stories, though, it's hard to think of a plot, I guess. It's harder, I think. I mean, you kind of, you know, an adventure story, if you're going to write a fantasy adventure, I mean, you can kind of have a very common plot. Mm-hmm. It's the story itself that's interesting. It's
right.
All the details and all that other stuff.
Right.
You know, there's tension and all that, but I mean, you can kind of use it kind of a step. But to me, finding those punchlines is a little bit hard, I think. So I don't know where you guys get your idea.
Everybody has a story.
Yeah, I want to jump in on one thing though. First, I want to talk about the inspiration, but I want to get to your point about the punchline. I would caution you not to worry about the punchline. Worry about the story and the punchline will come.
Yep.
The problem with books that are sort of, you know, the director M. Night Shyamalan did Sixth Sense and all that stuff. He is a very talented director, but the problem with Shyamalan is that he tries to do everything along the lines of, here is my gimmick. It's the reveal. It's the guess what? Ta-da! Right? And jinx. And so he wants to do everything about the last line. And he said that his big inspiration in this is Alfred Hitchcock. Well, the problem is that Alfred Hitchcock did not construct movies to create the last line. Alfred Hitchcock's reveal moments when Norman Bates, you know, oh my God, that's the mother and he's the same person. It works because you are so compelled by the characterization and the filming up to that point that you're like this by the time the punchline actually hits. So the punchline writes itself, I think.
Yeah.
I think what you need to worry about is making sure that you have a story which has, that you're communicating a one thing, a single thing, or two things, a theme, distilling it down to its essence, and then the punch is going to be there at the end, which leads me to the thing about inspiration. The interesting thing about short stories is that you can be motivated or inspired to write them on different levels. One is the way Gene explained. You walk outside, you see someone, you go, hmm. But there's also the short story that you want to write to communicate something thematically. This is something that Charles Dickens was a master at. Charles Dickens' books and short stories are thematic. Mm-hmm. Christmas Carol is one of the great thematic works ever done because it's not just about the theme ultimately, but right. The theme motivates it, it inspires it, it infuses it, right, with passion. And you're driven by it, and it's incredibly tight writing too because it's all centered around this one focal point, this theme. So when I wrote the story that's getting published that I've mentioned several times now, I wanted to write something about fathers and daughters. I wanted to write something for my daughter, who is now 4. I also wanted to, in some ways, write about the way that different people can imagine that relationship about fathers and daughters. And I said, how am I going to do this? Well, I'm a speculative fiction writer, so clearly I have to make my character into a dog-like figure, and, you know, and then he's carrying a sword. I mean, there has to be, you know, fantasy aspects of it, but I wanted to communicate that thematically, and I think I did. I'm very proud of that story. But I felt inspired while I was writing it to write it in the first place, not because of any person that I saw or thing that I saw out on the street, although I've used that just like Gene says in a lot of my work, but because there was something I wanted to communicate in terms of theme. And I'm increasingly interested in theme because I think that is, in a way, what makes the stories we write matter.
Yeah.
I don't mean polemic. I don't mean being heavy-handed. I don't mean that's not good writing. But I mean I want to communicate this idea, this concept, right? Give you an example of just very quickly, and then I'll let Doc speak. I'm sorry. There is a famous haiku poem in which a man, well, I won't tell you what he wanted to communicate until I read you the poem. The haiku is, there against the screen, a white silken dress flutters. Ah, the winter wind. Now, that was written by a 13th century Japanese poet whose wife had just died. And he wanted to communicate the feeling that he had of that loss. How do you communicate the loss of a life in a poem? Someone who is that important to you. And the way that he communicated it was by every time he saw the robe that she had used to wear sitting on that screen and fluttering in the wind, he was reminded intensely of that loss. And I still, to this day, have a little bit of a hard time talking about that poem because it is that powerful. And it has that kind of an impact, and we can all identify with losses in our own lives. That was something that was driven by theme. He wanted to communicate an emotion, a way that he felt. And it tightens the poem, and it makes it work utterly perfectly in the way that you can do it with short stories.
That's so, awesome.
I think so. Yeah, I think it might be.
I think you're more likely to find meaning in a short story. I should say a deeper meaning nowadays than even in novels.
You can. You can't. Oh, it depends. You can. The best novels still have enormous impact too, but in different ways. Doc, I'm sorry. We rambled on for anything. You have some thoughts about this?
I like to pick an odd something. Something usually a concept to latch on, and I build a story around that. And for the first story I wrote for Stalking the Wild Hare, the Gene
was the cooking with the critters.
It was
so cool.
The idea came zombie rats. This could be fun. What do you do with zombie rats? Where do zombie rats live? Zombie rats come from some evil research station somewhere. Well, having a research laboratory, that's no fun. What about the kitchen staff at the research laboratory? They'd have trouble with zombie rats. So that became the setting for the story of the cook at the research laboratory, who's just a cook, dealing with an escape of a plague of zombie rats suddenly invading the kitchen.
That's cool.
And you know, everything else sort of flowed from there. And that's, you know, the punch came was a natural effect of what was going on.
Right.
The novel I'm working on actually is zombie. I don't know why I get stuck with zombies, but because I'm not that creepy a person.
You're not alone. You're not alone, Doc.
I used to wonder what sort of sick person writes these things. Now I find out it's me. Something Richard Lee Byers said at a Gen Con years ago, he was talking about zombies, and he said, why do zombies always have to be evil, you know, flesh eaters? Why can't they be well-adjusted zombies? And I started thinking, well-adjusted zombies that work for the government and have a dental plan. And that stuck in my head, and that became the core of the novel I'm currently working on, which is basically a zombie working for the CIA. You know, zombie secret agents are awesome.
Sounds like
that's
Tim,
a neat idea.
Sounds like Tim Wagoner, too.
That's
Necropolis.
A neat idea. You know, my zombie was a race working. Car driver in a short story.
Which is great, because if he crashes,
it's no big deal.
I have not written any zombies, so I know.
And he loved playing Grateful Dead music.
Of course.
Ooh, nice.
And my punchline at the end, inadvertent, was he had a big crash at the end, and his head rolls off, and his mechanic picks up his head to go up to the winter stand because you get it, Grateful Dead, dead head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
You have to be into Grateful Dead, but I did not mean that when I wrote it.
So we're just about, very quickly, we got to.
I just had a question.
Sure.
The story that you read yesterday, did you envision the end of that story when you started writing it, or did that one
come? No, it did not. You mean with a letter? No. When I wrote that story, I knew how I wanted the story to end in terms of the action. I didn't know how I wanted him to leave. And that phrase, life is life, was it was really powerful to me, and it felt like that was the right way to sort of finish it, and how to represent it was the key. And I thought, well, he's not going to stick around after this. He's going to leave. He's a warrior. That's what he does. Thanks. That's what he's going to do. And so, no, I hadn't.
You guys should pick up the anthology.
Thank you very much.
That's from here.